Hi, everybody. It's Jim Beach Guy. Podcast is Be You, and I'm happy to say today I have from Flinks, Clayton Fike, who is the CRO, Chief Revenue Officer for the organization. He's a young man, and I thought it'd be great to have him on the show, talk about the company, talk about open banking. Clayton's had an interesting entrepreneurial career so far, as opposed to being like the rest of the stiffs in the world that have gone into investment banking or something like that. You chose a different path, which has been quite interesting. So welcome and thank you for joining me.
Thanks very much, Jim. It's great to be on the podcast.
So let's take us back. You don't have to tell us where you're born, which hospital, but sort of take us out of university. Where'd you go to school? How did you make your way to kind of where you are right now? Which is, by the way, has to be an incredibly exciting place that you're at with what's going on in the whole technology, finance world.
It is. There's a lot going on in fintech right now. I developed an interest in investing when I was very young, probably 12, 13 years old. My dad worked in the investment business. I went to McMaster for my undergrad, partly because they had, at the time, this is over 20 years ago, one of the world's only trading floors in the business school. So I got to learn a lot about markets and corporate finance and, you know, how data drives markets by using the Reuters terminal and the Bloomberg terminal and learning all about these different trading systems. So I was exposed to kind of financial technology at an earlier age, kind of coming out of school, probably right before, or, you know, before it was called fintech, really, and just really fell in love with it, fell in love with the way that data drives markets. When I graduated undergrad, I was really interested in private equity, actually, and talked to a lot of folks in private equity, and they said, you could probably develop some skill sets in learning how a business actually operates. So I went to an operations management consulting firm and spent time with all different types of businesses, learning about their processes and people and their systems. And it was a great experience, but as many of your listeners, I'm sure, know consulting can be very grueling. And I missed the capital markets technology that I was exposed to through the trading floor at Mac. So I got a job with Reuters. At the time, it was Reuters prior to the takeover by Thomson. And was fortunate to get exposed to the Canadian banks and the trading floors and learn about how data and technology were driving every aspect of capital markets. So I spent a couple years there. I left to go do my MBA at Western, came back to now Thomson Reuters, and had a great career with them, being exposed to kind of how technology was changing the financial and risk space. But ultimately decided to leave and go to a startup called Quandl, which was started by two former hedge fund managers. And the interesting thing about Quandl was they were trying to find data at the time that had never been used before in capital markets to be consumed by hedge funds to try to drive investment ideas and generate alpha. So it was really cool to be kind of in the ground floor there, trying to find these new sources of data. And my job was to go to New York and London and meet with all the hedgies and pitch them ideas with this data that they'd never seen before. So it was really, really cool, exciting time. This area was called alternative data. I was the first salesperson. We grew the company and we sold it to NASDAQ, which was, again, really, really interesting because, you know, I kind of view NASDAQ at the intersection of finance and technology in American capitalism. So worked very closely with their executives on building out the alternative data business. I got to work directly with Adina Friedman, who's a terrific CEO. And I definitely have a soft spot for NASDAQ, but realized that I enjoyed the process of building a business from the earlier stages. and decided I wanted to leave and go do a startup again. So I got introduced to Flinks, where I'm at now, through one of their board members and investors, and was really impressed with sort of the stage that the business was at, and thought I could contribute by helping them to grow and bring some of the maybe bigger corporate experience that I've had in the years to the company, but get the opportunity to work in a startup again. And Flinks is tackling this whole area of open banking, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit. But yeah, that's sort of my journey from undergrad. It's been quite exciting, but always sort of with this angle towards financial technology and data.
So one of the questions that sort of I wanted to ask that comes out of that, there's this traditional path that people come out of university and they sort of follow and they do the interview process in the fall type of thing, and where they go into investment banking, capital markets. And probably never like this in history before, there are so many alternative routes that don't have an easy path to find, right? So you sort of went to Thomson Reuters, the NASDAQ, then kind of got introduced to the first company, kind of got introduced to the second company. I know my own son has sort of gone a circuitous route, and I don't even know half the companies. So for young people and listening, sort of that say to themselves, I just don't want to be part of that old world. And I don't know if there are recruiters out there that kind of specialize in fintech, but if you wanted to get into that world, where do you kind of scratch around? You know, where do you put an ad up on LinkedIn? I want to be in the fintech world. Or like, where does it all sort of happen? Because it's defining new pathways, right? That didn't exist before. It's like creating an education system for 10 years out, right? And if you're lucky and you get on a track, like you meet this guy, you meet that woman, you meet this person, and all of a sudden it unfolds like a flower. But you could also be just bumping into walls, right?
Absolutely. When I was doing my MBA, to your point, there were two tracks, banking or consulting. And if you weren't on one of those tracks, you were kind of lost, right? You know, fortunately at Ivy, they actually had an entrepreneurship stream. So you're exposed to, I think, different ways of thinking or different career paths through that. But I think the fundamental thing that someone who wants maybe a different career has to pursue is like this idea of just curiosity. Like you have to always want to learn, whether it's joining a panel or reading a book, or you have to try to find ways to explore new opportunities. There was actually a company, this is back in 2012, which I invested in, at the time, not a very large amount, as kind of an angel investor in this startup of four young guys at the time, or a couple years younger than me. And I was just excited to get into the space and learn about angel investing and technology and what was going on. And the way I got connected to him was I was watching a show on BNN, which was like a show about pitching venture ideas. And I reached out to the guy on LinkedIn and said, can we have a coffee? And it turned into this, we're still friends today. I went to his wedding. And you know, it's just this idea that you always have to be curious and looking for new opportunities. I think that's how some of these interesting career paths develop. You can't wait for someone to tell you, here's the next step and here's the step after that.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I've, as you know, I coach a lot of young people as well. And we talk about careers and opportunities. And you know, I wish I was your age. I wish I was starting all over again. Because I think the endless opportunities in every industry, in everything, you know, when we came out of school, you know, you're either going to be a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, or an engineer type of thing. And, you know, especially being an immigrant son, my family were immigrants. I was first generation. Even at the age of 37, I became president and chief operating officer of CIBC Wood Gundy. And when I phoned my mother to tell, she still said, you know, you'd have made a great lawyer. And I'm like, no. I'd have sucked at being a lawyer, and this is so much better a job. So I think there must be a bit of that in having to explain to people, like they go, so what is it you do? What is the company? You know, maybe not your generation of people, but, you know, sort of the rest of the old world, right? And when you meet people, they say, what do you do? And you say, well, I'm just chief revenue officer for Flinks. And they go, what is that? So what is Flinks and who started it?
Yeah, so started by three founders in Montreal in 2016. Fred, YG, and Jewel. They're still with the company today, and I work very closely with them. Flinx is a data company. So what we do is we connect to an individual or a business's bank account at their financial institution, and we access the data that they have in their account with their consent, and that's to be used to power something for their benefit. So an example that I use in like the medical field is, say you go to a walk-in clinic and they have to treat you for something, and they say, before we can treat you, can we get access to your medical records at your family doctor? And you say, yes, of course, and you give them your consent, and they fax your family doctor, and boom, they have your records. Well, if you've been banking with a bank for 30 years, but another bank's offering you a credit card or a mortgage or some financial service, you can't just walk in there and they recognize who you are. But what we allow is the sharing of your data from your existing financial institution to the one that you want to do business with, to help give you like a new financial service or financial service quicker. It's all driven by data, and we sell analytics on top of it too that help new fintech companies power processes and serve their customers better. So that's what Flinx is. You can think of us as like the financial data layer of the internet, or kind of the infrastructure that powers the sharing of data.
So there's two benefactors to that. There are the institutions that now have more transparency, and I'm asking the question, I'm not telling you. There are institutions that now have more transparency, not only on their own customers, but new potential customers, because they may have only seen a sliver of their own customer in the previous times, and he paid all his credit cards here, but over here he's got some dark shadows and some other things that he doesn't want to talk about. And then secondly, it's the second beneficiary of it are people like me and everybody else who perhaps historically have always banked at one institution, primarily because it's too difficult to go to another one and start all over and sort of go, well, you know, where's your history? Where is this? And where's that? Is that the two sort of opportunities that they are?
Both of those points are absolutely bang on. So it just makes it easier all around. Now, the banks who have traditionally had the customer at first were a little nervous. They're like, well, we don't want maybe our customers' data being shared so easily because they might leave us. So it's fostering innovation. It's fostering competitiveness. And I think the banks now have realized that this is the new world that we live in, powered by data. You think of Amazon and Facebook and big technology companies that have so much data on you, probably without your consent. and as a result, they can serve you better because they know so much about you. The same thing is happening in financial services, but it's with your consent. And so the banks now have come to this realization and are working to understand how they can benefit kind of as a data supplier, the place where all the data resides, how they can benefit from this kind of new environment that's developing as well.
And so I guess in many ways they have to, it's for protection for their own customers, and it's also for attracting, because with your company and what you do, you've lowered the barriers to entry to getting new clients for people like exactly. Wealthsimple or Robinhood or anybody like that. Whereas historically those people would have been blocked out because they didn't have the data on the people. They couldn't make the credit decision about the people. So, but now with access to all that information, they can actually set up shop and start doing a different kind of credit card, different kind of checking account, different kind of this. Is that this next evolution that we're right in right now?
That's exactly right. And this is all called open banking. Some jurisdictions have called it other things, open finance, consumer directed finance. But I think the general term globally is open banking. This idea that you can share data. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. I mean, in Europe, they've actually mandated that customers have the rights to their own data and that banks must allow customers to share it. in Canada and the US, the regulation hasn't really kicked in, but the industry is figuring it out on its own because it's just the natural evolution of where financial services is going.
So are there a bunch of flinks in other sectors, in healthcare, in automotive, in different sectors of the economies of the world? Or is your business applicable to beyond financial services?
Well, we're just focused on financial services. So our mission is to consolidate an individual or business's financial data wherever it resides. So in the future, there are so many different places that we could access. We've started with the banks, obviously, as a kind of an obvious place to begin. But if you think of your financial data, it resides with a number of institutions all over the place. We are, I guess you could call us an API company. That stands for Application Programmable Interface. There are API companies that are popping up in all industries that are allowing, you know, software to talk to each other. And so, you know, to your point around healthcare and others, I think the emergence of API companies is only going to make all industries more efficient as software across the board makes it easier to talk to each other.
So I guess one would think by the natural extrapolation of that is that at a point in time, the API companies will get to the point where consolidating the API companies is the next opportunity. If you look at what IHS, Lance Ugle and IHS Markets did, right? They started out as off the run bonds and then started consolidating, you know, basically their whole rise was buying companies for stock, right? And buying people and things like that. Because if your application works in financial services, there's no reason to think it wouldn't work in everything else as well, right?
Exactly. And I think it's really interesting to see how traditional banking is now adopting some of the data and technologies that capital markets has already implemented, you know, maybe 10 years ago plus. So no, that's exactly right. And the more data out there, the more information there is to aggregate and the more information there is to run analytics on top of. As you know, and I'm sure, you know, your listeners know, the amount of data is exploding at a tremendous pace.
And so let's talk about a couple of weeks ago. Was it a couple of weeks ago, Katie? I can't remember. Was it last week? I had Larry Zelvin. And Larry Zelvin on the head of cybersecurity at Bank of Montreal. Unbelievable human being. Worked at the White House, Homeland Security, Naval Aviator for umpteen years. I got more calls. I'm sure not as many as I'll get on your podcast, but I got more calls about Larry because I think people are shit scared about cybersecurity. So if I'm on the other side of the coin, I go, whoa, all my data out there. Like, do I really want everybody to have that kind of access to my data? I'm in the midst of a credit card dispute now with Facebook stars that I've got $20,000 worth of Facebook stars charges on it, right? And so I'm fighting a rear guard. So what do you say to people about that, right? Because, I mean, as Larry said, there's some guy sitting in his underwear in his grandmother's basement opening 10,000 accounts and emptying them, right?
Yeah, I mean, security is always a concern. We've been working very closely with the banks and other third parties to make sure that the way that we connect to them is encrypted and secure. And we're encouraging them to work more closely with us. And like I said, now they've come around to doing that a little bit more. But it's of the utmost importance. We have a huge information security team. We're SOC 2 compliant. You know, everything we do is encrypted. We will purge data immediately when we don't need it. So I think a lot of those potential challenges have been solved. I mean, there are literally millions of Canadians and tens of millions of Americans that share their financial data every month in this fashion. So it's there, but yeah, I guess cybersecurity threats are prevalent kind of within any industry, and financial services is no exception.
My understanding is at this point in time, you're only Canadian, right?
We started out just Canadian, and we're definitely the market leader in Canada, but we recently expanded into the US. We've started, we're building a team in California, and we are getting clients really quickly in the lending space. That's our first sort of vertical. But within Canada, you know, we just started in a new vertical, which is wealth management, which you know very well. Now you can aggregate data from your brokerage account. So if you go to your financial advisor and you might have money at a bunch of different institutions, they can pull all that together and give you a holistic view, you know, with respect to a financial plan, say, for example.
I'm all in for California if you're looking for old guys to go on down there. Everybody's leaving California because of the taxes, but I'm all in for California.
We might need to look at Austin or Miami here pretty quick.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Those would be good, two good spots. So in this this race for open banking, what are the characteristics of the winner?
I don't think it's a winner take all space. I think there'll always be a number of different players that do things a little bit differently. But for us, it's like connectivity is table stakes. You need to connect all the financial institutions. And that needs to be, like I said, secure and reliable. And you need to get kind of good, clean data out of that. And the second piece is, you know, capable analytics that sit on top of it, which can help drive decision-making and models and things like that. So the winner or the group of winners that will succeed will have both of those characteristics, connectivity and great analytics on top.
Will we see another five Wealth Simples?
We could. The barriers to entry and starting a bank today are very, very low. The differentiation is the customer experience. And Wealthsimple does that fantastically. They have an excellent customer service, kind of customer experience driven by data and technology. And I think that's why they're winning so quickly. If you've seen their growth over the last even 12 months, it's phenomenal. They're a really important client of ours. And we love to see how they're growing so quickly.
Yeah, it's one of those things, though. It's like when you have a bunch of kids, you can't favor one too much over the other, especially with clients. But they would not be able to do what they do without what you do.
Correct.
That's the important point, is that what the technology and the API and the way you've structured your company is not only about the technology and the API, but what it's enabling people, you know, it's like when we went to fiberglass hockey sticks, right? From wooden hockey sticks. The real spin, which is what I'm always looking for, the real opportunity is to extrapolate what one little company of Flinks is enabling so many other companies to do things that were not possible before, were not thinkable before, and now are both possible, thinkable, and doable.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we weren't the first ones in the space, but I'd like to think we're innovating. Some of our big competitors now have been acquired by MasterCard, and there was one Visa tried to acquire another one, Plaid. So the space is evolving really quickly. But yeah, I think you're right. It's enabling disruption in a sense.
Exactly. And if you get taken over by MasterCard or one of those, I look forward to an invitation on your yacht. Listen, Clayton, thank you very, very much. It's been a real pleasure. You know, I try to keep up in this part of the world, but it's really hard. And I think unless you're immersed in it, it's really difficult to be an expert. So I appreciate having someone like yourself. I wish you the best success. I've spent a lifetime of being a disruptor, but in different ways. And I love to see it. I love to see that creativity unleashed. I love to see people that are smart and different get opportunity. So good luck to you, Flinks, and your partners. And it's been a pleasure having you.
Well, thanks so much for the invitation, Jim. I really appreciate it. And it's been great getting to know you over the last little while as well. So really, really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you. Podcast is Be You. The world will adjust. And here's a man that is making the world adjust to them.